Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your role with the show.
Sure. My name is Johanna Gruenhut, and I am the director of Compulsion, or The House Behind.
Yes, which is coming to Theater J in D.C. January 26th through February 20th. Thanks for joining us.
I'm so thrilled to be here.
Now, I guess off the top, we should tell everybody this story sort of involves a behind the scenes take on, Anne Frank and her diary. But explain the general premise.
The story is based on actual fact, but it is sort of a fictionalized version of history with our protagonist, Sid Silver, who's based on the late Jewish American writer Meyer Levin, and his compulsion and his drive and obsession to get the diary of Anne Frank to be made, well, to be published first in America, and then also to be made into a dramatic play. And it sort of weaves this story about who owns Anne Frank's story and how it came to sort of become part of not only American cultural DNA, but more globally, you know, how we have come to know her and her story and her diary.
Now, give me a little, I want to go into the play and sort of the creative license and all that kind of stuff in a second, but real quick, give us a refresher of the basic history of, you know, who Anne Frank was and when it was written, you know, the whole actual backstory.
Sure. So Anne Frank was a young adolescent living in Amsterdam, and on her birthday, she received a diary just months before the Nazi invasion of Holland. Anne Frank was a Jewish girl, and her parents sought to leave Holland, but couldn't get a visa. And they even tried to come to the United States, but their visas weren't approved. And so they decided the best options for them was to go into hiding. And Otto Frank, Anne's father, had a business. His business had a warehouse, and the family went into hiding inside of the warehouse, on the upper floors of the warehouse. They were joined by another family, friends of theirs, the Von Pels, and later on another man named Fritz Pfeffer, who Anne writes about with a different name in the diary. So, you know, Anne, as a 12-year-old girl, she's like, what should I bring? And what should I bring? What should I pack? And the first thing she decides to bring with her is this diary. And she writes what is happening and narrates her world and the world around her and what she sees and what she feels. And she writes daily and really documents what life was like for her in this house behind, in this secret annex. And through Anne, we learn about what life was like in hiding, about food rations, about what was happening outside, that she can sort of peek out through the window and see Jews being rounded up, and her awareness of what Holland was like under Nazi occupation. And she lived there in hiding for 2 years. And so she turns 15 by the end of the diary, but, you know, and then they find her. The police, you know, Nazi policemen find her, and she and her family are taken to various camps. Ultimately, Anne and her sister die in the concentration camp Bergen-Belsen, and her father was the lone survivor. Out of the seven that were in hiding, Otto Frank is the only one who survived. He comes back to Amsterdam, comes back to the warehouse, goes back upstairs to the attic, and he's presented with Anne's diary that some of the sort of helpers kept safe for him so that he could have some memory of her.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks for reminding us through all.
Sorry, that was very long-winded. I don't know.
No, it's totally fine. I mean, I know. I mean, a lot of us, I would hope a lot of us, you know, either read the diary, the book, you know, in school, or saw the George Stevens movie. But either way, you know, it's a good refresher. And yeah, as you said, you know, she tragically passed away, but I'm glad that we had, you know, her memoir in her actual words. And so that was published, what, I think in like 1947 originally.
Posthumously, yeah, like, right. So it came out first in Dutch and then in French. It wasn't published in America until 1952, which is really where Compulsion or The House Behind begins. And that's sort of where our story picks up.
Right. Okay. And then so your main character, your protagonist is Sid Silver, who was not a real person, but is based on a real person, you said?
Correct.
Okay, cool. Now, so what exactly is his journey, or, you know, what how does he become in possession of the actual diary, and what sort of challenges does he face, like, you know, in approaching the publishing world?
I think he was we learned that Sid was a war correspondent, and while he was living in the south of France, his wife handed him this small little volume that had caught her eye, and he reads it in one night, like, reads the entire diary and believed that this was the voice that was going to explain what the Holocaust really was to the masses, you know, that she was going to be the voice of the 6 million perished souls. And he, you know, sort of, what hits the pavement is the term I'm looking for, you know, trying to find a publisher in America, and finally succeeds in urging them to publish this diary. And also of his belief that once it becomes published, it will then become sort of a sensation and will be able to become a play, maybe even a movie, that there's theatricality within the diary that could then affect more people. So his real dream was getting Anne's voice out into the world. And he believed that theater was the way to do it, which is why it's so exciting to be working on a play about theater, about making theater and the power of theatrical storytelling, because here's this man, Sid Silver, who's like, he says, one of the lines is, imagine how many more people will be affected when they see Anne on stage. And that idea of seeing is believing type thing. And he loves Anne Frank so much that he believes he is the only person who can write her story properly. And that is also ultimately his, at least in this play, his artistic demise, you know, because he's so compelled and so obsessed that he loses a little bit of himself in his love for Anne.
Right. His compulsion to, you know, his obsession to write this story is both, I guess it's his, both his biggest strength of actually getting it done, and then becomes his biggest weakness as well.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. So who plays our Sid Silver? Who's the actor on stage?
So Paul Morella is our Sid Silver, a beloved DC actor. And then the people that he confronts and is up against are played by Kimberly Gilbert and Marcus Kidd, who sort of swap and switch all the roles. And then I think most interestingly and surprisingly, there are marionettes.
Ah, explain. That's right. Because when I was looking, I wanted to ask you about that, because I was looking down the cast list and it says puppeteers. So how do the puppets factor in? I mean, because, you know, with puppets, we think of silly, goofy kind of stuff, but obviously we're dealing with Anne Frank and the Holocaust. So how do you sort of walk that line?
Very carefully. We have two brilliant puppeteers, Aaron Stevenson and Matt Atchison. And in this play, Anne Frank is a marionette.
Oh, okay.
And in this play, Otto Frank is a marionette and Peter Van Dan is a marionette. And Meep Geis, who one of the helpers, is a marionette.
What's sort of the creative artistic choice in doing that, as you know, making a mesmer in it?
So Rinna B. Graff, our playwright, believed when she was first writing this play, she's like, how do you put Anne Frank on stage? You know, how do you do that? How do you put words in this girl's mouth? And also as a writer, I know Rinna felt, how do I put words in another writer's mouth? And it just so happens that Meyer Levin, the person that Sid Silver is based on, he had a marionette theater and he made marionette shows.
Ah, okay.
And so then this idea came to her that, oh, I could use marionettes. And that became very freeing, because what's amazing about puppets is they're inanimate, right? But it takes people to move them. And that's very much like what Sid feels like is happening to him. But I think more importantly, more emotionally, and in terms of the keeping of who owns Anne's story, many of us who read her diary and who are engaged with her and her story latch onto moments of her life, and we feel some bit of identification with her, like fighting with your mother or liking a boy, right? These are all things that Anne writes about. And having a marionette, we can project all of those feelings on the marionette and have the marionette sort of feed it back to us. And every person can feel their own connection to a marionette that they can't necessarily feel with an actual human being. And there is this wonder that happens when something inanimate becomes animate, when something inanimate becomes human. And that is both the power of Anne, like the power of her story and how she can touch people. It, like I said, plays into the, like, who's pulling the strings in this play, like who's really in control of Anne's story.
Right.
And also the idea that theater has so many possibilities and beauties. And this is part of what Sid was trying to explore.
I love that concept. That, yeah, the symbolic nature of who's holding the strings of telling this story and who's conducting it. That's really cool. As a director, hats off. Well, so in addition to the marionettes, what else do we see visually on stage? Like, I mean, is it bare boned, or is it more like is there a set design of, you know,
the set design is bare boned. The set design is bare boned. We were trying to create a world that felt like an empty theater space, and sort of what happens when you can create art in a void. There's multi-purpose uses, but also how we can puppet objects. So when it rains, is there really rain, or is there a watering can that has water in it? Nice. Is there really a lighthouse, or is it just a flashlight? Is there really a door, or is it something that we understand is functioning as a door? And so we're just trying to use our imagination and our power of sort of suspending disbelief, because that's sort of what's so exciting about theater.
Well, and in a way, it kind of plays into, I'm sure, the imagination that Anne had to, you know, when she's hiding locked away up in, you know, this attic, you know, and she can't see a lighthouse. She probably did use a flashlight. She can't see, you know, the rain is outside her window. So she, you know, maybe she has to create rain out of a water pitcher. I mean, yeah, I mean, it kind of plays to that whole inanimate objects, you know, standing for other things that she probably experienced when not being able to go to the outside world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she was a girl with a deep imagination. There are parts of the diary that are highlighted in the play, in Compulsion or The House Behind. So you hear her words and you just think, wow, what a talent this girl was. And it leaves you with like, how much more she could have produced if only, you know.
Exactly. Well, we'll never know the answer to that question about Anne, but thanks to you at Theater J, we can all go see Compulsion or The House Behind. It runs January 26th through February 20th at Theater J in DC. So get your tickets now on theaterj.org. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. And I should just say, we also have streaming options. So if you don't want to come live, we understand. You can watch it from the privacy of your own home, and you can go to the same website to purchase those tickets.
Sounds great. Hey, I really appreciate you joining us. Sounds like a great show.
Thanks, Jason. Talk to you soon, I hope.
Yep. Sounds good. See ya.
Bye.